Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For low to moderate income individuals, accessing credit comes with higher costs. And research shows that people with lower credit scores who borrow often face greater risk of debt, delinquency, and bankruptcy. Liz Dykeman, senior researcher at the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank, has been studying this phenomenon, and she joins us today to talk about her findings and share insight into ways folks can overcome the credit divide. Liz, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Liz, your research is very much focused on this credit divide. Can you define what it is for us?
Of course. So in research that we conducted in the spring of 2025, we spoke to 12 different communities in our seven-state district, our service area, and we really found out about how low and moderate income people are interacting with financial institutions to access credit. And we found that they face barriers to accessing traditional credit, and that they also oftentimes are really, you know, pulled towards using what we call non-traditional credit. That might include things like payday loans, buy now, pay later, peer-to-peer lending, which includes things like Venmo, Cash App, et cetera, sometimes in places of those traditional financial services.
Mm-hmm. The research that you have been doing, it focuses very specifically on community development. And the recent report that was issued, it's titled Access to Credit and Financial Services, A Bridge to Financial Well-Being. You focused on multiple states. And as you mentioned, there were roundtable discussions, and some of them took place in the St. Louis area. Generally speaking, Liz, did anything strike you about the state of credit access here compared to other places?
Yeah, in those conversations, you know, we held four different conversations in the St. Louis area. And there are a couple of things that, especially compared to the other zones that we had those discussions in, came up. So one was really the importance of financial literacy, both formal and informal. So when I say informal, that's the education that someone might get in their everyday life from their family and friends, especially when they're growing up. And formal refers to programs, maybe financial counseling that people might take part in, you know, later in life typically. But, you know, that's really, we heard, was really foundational to how someone accesses credit. So, for example, if you have more experience and knowledge about banks, you are more likely to have higher trust in them and to use them later on in life. So that was certainly a big part of our conversations in the area. Another one were some of the barriers around accessing credit at traditional financial institutions, which includes, you know, commercial banks, community development, financial institutions, and credit unions. So some of them were document requirements. So oftentimes when you're trying to open a bank account or access credit, you need to, for example, provide an ID. You might also need to provide documents like tax statements or business plans. And oftentimes people did not have those on hand or know how to prepare them. And technical language of bank documents was also a major barrier that we heard from St. Louis area participants, mm-hmm. that oftentimes participants described as jargon, which is difficult for people to understand.
These barriers that you're describing, to what extent do people or institutions assume that folks know what they are?
You know, I think that we heard from participants that, you know, they really hoped to see traditional financial institutions make their products and services more geared towards low and moderate income people. So that would mean, for example, maybe changing the document requirements, providing technical assistance, which may happen in banks or at resource providers, and in a lot of ways also increasing the speed of services, especially when people are, you know, in an emergency situation, for example, like they need to feed their child the next day or get a car loan to go to work.
Mm-hmm. Were those two among the most frequently cited insofar as emergencies are concerned?
Yes, those were two things that came up often in conversations.
Mm-hmm. Were there any differences when it comes to gender? So did you find that there are more women who face credit barriers than men do?
We didn't, with participants, we didn't speak specifically about gender. We spoke more so about personal and household experiences in accessing credit.
Okay. What were some of the scenarios that were shared? I mean, these are anecdotes that are coming from real people. Mm-hmm. So these are not stories that are made to illustrate a point, but what were some of the anecdotes that do make very clear what people face in the day-to-day?
You know, something that really stands out to me is, are some quotes that participants shared with us in the St. Louis region about how low and moderate income people in particular tend to face really high costs of borrowing, including fees, and that, you know, oftentimes they're the people who are less least able to really take on those expenses.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say another thing that really stood out to me was, you know, the number of people who, you know, talked about the prevalence of these barriers within their communities and the people that they serve. You know, the participants that we talked to come from banks, resource providers, chambers of commerce, et cetera. So they really have on-the-ground knowledge about how people are accessing credit.
Mm-hmm. Producer Olivia Mizell spoke with Christian Findlay, who has been working with a financial coach at St. Louis organization Prosperity Connection to help improve her credit for about a year now. And Christian said that her struggles with credit started with the way she grew up.
Was raised super, super low middle class. So watched, like, both my parents worked forever. But watched kind of the cycle of like paycheck to paycheck and things being turned off, things, you know, like utilities, things like that, all of that. And so I never really had a foundation of financial management, financial wisdom. And so entering my adult life, I fell into a lot of the same habits of just trying to make ends meet, robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of situations, getting into a lot of, I had some payday loans. I had a couple of predatory loans from like those companies that are, you know, you're late night watching TV, stressing about life, and then a flashy commercial comes on and it's like, you can get $1,000 right now, just call. I was like, yes, please, absolutely. Did not read the fine print. So a lot of those things. And yeah, it definitely hindered just like life.
Christian also said that when her credit was at its lowest, she didn't use traditional financial institutions like banks.
That score defines your worth in so many areas. And so it was, yes, I'm struggling. Yes, I need help, but I don't know where to go and who to turn to, because you have to reach a certain level before a lot of programs to help open up to you. So yeah, I didn't, I was going to the shady places because the shady places were the only places that were accepting of my poor credit or weren't running my credit at all. But, you know, yeah, I didn't go to any reputable companies, banks, situations, because I just didn't feel like I could.
So Liz, Christian, in that first clip, talks about the way that she grew up. And I think that speaks to the informal education mm-hmm. that you were talking about earlier. When it comes to the second part of it, which is people trying to figure out how to do things outside, you know, traditional institutions, what were the insights that came from the St. Louis roundtables regarding how many people actually are facing that kind of situation?
Yeah, her comments really resonate with what we heard from participants. We often heard that, you know, despite the advantages that traditional financial institutions might have, like lower interest rates, a lot of times people do use the non-traditional financial institutions, again, payday lenders, peer-to-peer lending, for a couple of reasons. One, it might be the best option available to them. If you, as you know, was provided as an example, have a low credit score and were unable to get a loan from a traditional financial institution, that might be your only option or your best option. And another big part of it is that, you know, there are, I think, things that attract people to non-traditional financial institutions. And you know, these things include convenience, so ease, speed, and availability. So one is that oftentimes payday lenders, buy now, pay later, those are, one, much faster a lot of times in being able to access credit or transaction account than maybe a traditional financial institution. We also know that they're available oftentimes 24/7. Payday lenders tend to have more locations and longer hours in a lot of communities. So in a lot of ways, these really serve the needs of people that are looking for credit and might not have been successful at a traditional financial institution.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the average credit score is in St. Louis?
So I've done some preliminary research in low and moderate income zip codes in St. Louis City and found that in the first quarter of 2025, the average credit score was around 630. Which is what we call a subprime credit score, meaning that it, most likely that credit score will hinder your hinder your ability to be able to get a loan or even to get a low-cost loan.
Mm-hmm. As far as geography goes, with these credit scores, credit access, is there a geographical divide? Are there differences based on where people live?
So I didn't look at geographic divide, but there is a lot of good research on this. So I want to say that, you know, first and foremost, we know that there are a couple of factors that oftentimes are related with places that have constrained credit access. So those things include the share of the population that is not in the workforce and is in poverty. There are also some relationships between these places and the shares of population that are renters and live in rural areas. So we do know that a lot of research shows that rural places have disproportionate access to credit. And some of those reasons are that they tend to have less internet access, so online banking might be less available to them. And, you know, that means that they might are more likely to rely on physical bank locations, which, unfortunately, they tend to have less access to mm-hmm. in their communities.
Now, low credit is one situation mm-hmm. that people may face, but there's another one that is particularly relevant to young people. Barbara Ewing started working full-time for financial planning firm Justine Peterson a few years ago, and she was 19 years old then. And Barbara said that she had no credit history at that time. She said this hindered her ability to do some things like buy a car.
My first week at Justine Peterson, I remember we did kind of like a group exercise a little bit, and we did like a soft pull on my credit report. We reviewed it, and we were just like, well, there's nothing here. There's nothing there. And it was actually great because, especially like coming out of high school, I didn't have anything. So it was good to just start fresh and actually start right. Start fresh and start right. And because, you know, I think a lot of our younger generation, is young adults come out of high school or they're going straight into like student loans or a car loan or auto loan, and they don't know and they don't have the tools. And so they just in this day and they don't even know about it.
Now, Barbara, through her job at Justine Peterson, has been able to avail herself of the firm's resources in order to build her credit. But Liz, how can people build credit from nothing if they don't have resources like the ones that Barbara has access to?
Well, let me first say that Barbara is not alone. I also did some quantitative research and found at the national level about 4.9% of people do not have a credit score. And some of the low and moderate income zip codes in St. Louis City that I mentioned, the rates can be as high as 25%.
25?
That's correct.
Okay.
So this is certainly something that, when we say credit constrained, is certainly part of that population. You know, in our research with in the roundtables, we found that a lot of people, or a really important part of the landscape, was what we call resource providers. So these are people that provide programs and assistance that help people make connections to traditional banks, for example. And a lot of times their core work is in building credit scores. and connecting people with banks. So there are, you know, different traditional credit products out there to help people build their loans over time. And we know that resource providers play a really important part in connecting people to those resources and banks.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Liz Dykeman, who's a senior researcher on the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis's Community Development Research Team. And we're discussing the credit divide. In your title is community development. How is an individual score related to community development or community health, Liz?
That's a great question. So I should first say that when we talk about financial well-being and access to financial products, this is a really core part of someone's life. So, you know, transaction accounts or bank accounts allow people to securely store, send, and receive money, which we all need to do. And credit is incredibly important because it lets us weather financial emergencies, invest in our futures, whether that be a student loan or a home loan, and just manage our everyday finances.
Mm-hmm.
So something that we continue to hear from the community is the really crucial role that credit is playing in people's lives. So whether that means that people are able to more fully participate in the economy, which, you know, helps economic growth and a stable financial system, but, you know, more on a personal and community level, they are able to, for example, start that small business with a loan, or, you know, be able to, you know, make sure that they're able to put or keep food on the table for the rest of the month, you know, if it comes through financing.
Mm-hmm. There was a conference last week held by the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis called Crossing the Credit Barrier, and you helped organize that, Liz. People are coming together at a very particular time. There's the government shutdown, and also here, locally, there are folks who have been struggling to deal with damage and other kinds of fallout because of the May 16th tornado. Were there questions around that came up that are pertinent to people who are impacted by those events and what they're struggling with as low and moderate income people?
Yeah, the conference brought together research and practitioners from across the nation. Most people came from the St. Louis area and, you know, have firsthand experience or serve people who have been affected by the May 16th tornado. You know, something that came up quite a lot in these conversations was, you know, what the state of access to credit is, which is a really important conversation to have right now, along with what are some solutions or approaches to, you know, being able to build access to credit. You know, I think some really interesting topics to me was, you know, for example, the role of alternative financing. So how might we look at current requirements and make them, you know, maybe better suited for low and moderate income communities, for example, among many other topics.
Mm-hmm. What is the community impact overall? I really want to kind of put a fine point on this. When people struggle to build toward a business, toward a home, why is this bad for community?
I think that, you know, what we've heard, again, from participants in the roundtable discussions and in other conversations that community development has had is that, you know, it's someone's not, while you might have your own personal credit score, that affects how you operate within your community. You know, whether that be being able to, you know, start a small business and employ people, you know, your neighbors, your friends, to serve those in your community, or whether it be, you know, being able to fix up your home or keep your home safe and stable, and, you know, being able to stay in your community too in a lot of examples.
Yeah. And in our last 30 seconds or so, how did the findings from the conference and research influence the future work that you'll be doing at the Fed?
Something that we've been doing with the research is that we continue to engage the communities that we first spoke to. So, we first provided some preliminary findings from this research, but we really hope to go back to those communities to have more conversations about how communities might are interested in improving access to credit, and, you know, continue to get more information about how people are experiencing the economy.
Mm-hmm. Liz Dykman is a senior researcher on the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis's Community Development Research Team. Liz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was produced by Olivia Mizell.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.